This is attorney Robert Liptak. Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The first series of shows is an overview of the big picture of debt in its four stages. Pre-debt, before we take it on, the comfortable stage of having debt, which would be stage two, the slippery slope stage, or stage three, and four, finally, the apparent abyss one can fall into financially. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. A very common experience today is debt. While debt can enable individuals and companies to do useful things they would otherwise be unable to do, excessive debt can cause serious financial problems for individuals, businesses, and societies at large. Debt is pervasive in the U.S. today. According to the latest figures from the Federal Reserve, there is almost $30,000 outstanding in consumer debt and home mortgages for every man, woman, and child in the United States. In other words, we are collectively responsible for about $9 trillion in debt. In the first show, and continuing today, we look at ourselves as potential debtors, the pre-debt phase, and areas we can control. The main thought was the borrower must be alert to the terms of the contract that creates debt. We discussed the concept of caveat emptor, which means buyer beware, or in our context, borrower beware. The borrower needs to be clear on the meaning and effect of the contract he or she is getting into. Contracts today have become quite complex and mostly creditor-friendly, not borrower-friendly instruments. The contract is basically written by the lender. Also, nowadays, there is a huge push to lend money because the creditor most often sells the loan it made to you and therefore is not dependent upon the need or the risk to collect its investment. Most lenders make their money by the upfront fees when originally making the loan, and then through selling it, they make more money and perhaps servicing the loan on behalf of the purchaser investor. So the ability to repay is not in the initial equation as far as the lender is concerned in most lending situations nowadays. Our simple response to all this is try to understand what you are signing. Don't be in a hurry to sign something because it will cost you later. I saw a little takeoff on the Visa card the other day. It was called FEESA, F-E-E-S-A. Free gifts now, huge fees later. Well, that's really the sum of it nowadays in the lending department. So with this background, let's go a little deeper into these issues of contracts and protecting yourself. Now, contract law is a tool for justice, and that's what we traditionally think, right? That's the theory, yet there are some important points to note. From the debtor's side, the principal premise is if you sign it, regardless of the terms, you are presumed to understand it and, of course, all its consequences and risks. But the fact is that contract terms are often contrary to the reasonable expectation of consumers. For example, there's the concept of universal default. If you default on anybody's loan, someone other than the lender whose contract you're signing, you're in default of that contract that you're currently signing. That is called universal default, and it really is contrary to our expectation. We often see non-standard kinds of terms in these contracts nowadays. They're always written in favor of the writer, who is the creditor, and they're very complex. Lawyers can't generally understand a lot of them, to be frank with you. And the terms can and do change unilaterally. That means that in the contract itself, it says one of the parties, the writer, the lender, can change the terms. This really is very new in the way contract law is analyzed nowadays. We call them back in the 70s and 80s, when I first started practicing law, illusory contracts. And credit card terms are really good examples of illusory contracts. The idea of being able to change the terms of the contract in the future, which affects the past obligation, is an illusion as far as the debtor is concerned. Contracts nowadays are also very much adhesion contracts. There's no room to dicker. You take it or leave it. Your credit card contract, again, is one of those examples. Car loans are often in this category too. The entire contract is one-sided in its terms. And you're dealing with somebody who has a lot more bargaining power than you. And as a result, you're not dealing at arm's length. So our response is be very, very careful of the terms of the contract. Don't just look at the benefits you're getting. Look at the risks and the possible pitfalls if things go south, things go wrong. One of the big things nowadays in these contracts is arbitration clauses. Arbitration clauses give up the right to go to court. The contract requires that you get an arbitrator, which is hired by the lender, the creditor, and that arbitrator makes a final decision on the facts and quote unquote the law in the circumstances. Now, that arbitrator is hired by the creditor, and of course, if they don't have a good track record, they're not going to get rehired. But people are giving up very valuable rights because it cannot be appealed to a court. It's a final determination. So credit cards are more and more having these as terms nowadays, and we would like to get credit cards that don't have arbitration clauses or, as I mentioned, universal defaults. And there are some out there, but you have to shop. You can't just take the first thing that comes along. Some of these contracts have double cycle billing. Now, double cycle billing means that you are going to be paying your interest not on what you paid down in principal last month, but over the last 2 months. That's called double cycle billing. Another thing that some of these contracts have are average daily balances, which basically takes the average of all of the purchases during the month. Let's say $100 on day one of the month and $200 on day 16 of the month. And one version of the average daily balance would make it that you paid $150 worth of purchases interest during that month, which is going to be more than if you were to do a total monthly balance computation. And one other example is credit line cushions. You have lots of cushion on your credit. So if it's just credit cards, you may have $30,000 worth of credit card limit that you're allowed. And as you use up more and more of that limit, it actually can become, under some contracts, a triggering point for a default. You don't have that much of a cushion. Now you're a higher credit risk. For those just joining us, this is attorney Robert Liptak, and you are visiting the program Life and Debt, your practical debt education program from KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. The legal premise that we're really emphasizing today is that you have to understand what you are getting into. You can't say, I didn't know or understand the terms of the contract. You have to read it. You have to ask questions. You should not sign a contract until you understand it. You should never be in a hurry to sign something. And don't naively trust what the lender, the person giving you the money, is telling you it all means. Take the time up front, or frankly, later on you will wish that you had, and you'll be spending a lot of time and probably money or lost money to deal with the problem. The next important point is to know who you are dealing with. I found a quote from Mark Twain. He said, "A banker is the type of fellow who will lend you his umbrella when the sun is shining and then ask for it back the minute it starts to rain." That's all in good fun. However, we have to realize that no matter who is lending us the money, they're in it to make a profit. Also, you have to remember they do not represent you. They actually, if they're a corporation, have a legal obligation to turn a profit. And that's a priority over many, many other issues. And the way we can battle that is to protect ourselves with knowledge and also with the power to say no. No, I don't want these terms. No, I don't want this contract. I'm going somewhere else to find a similar product or loan, and I'm not going to do it on these terms. It's important to remember that you often need an independent counsel, representation, and judgment when you are taking out loans, particularly significant loans. You may need to get a lawyer in certain situations. For example, I see many times where one lawyer is representing both sides of a real estate transaction, or in some states, divorces. This can be very legal and ethical in those places, those states, but I think experientially, this is not a wise thing. You need neutral, independent counsel to deal with large loans. Many, many times these refinancing situations on homes, there's no attorney involved. And this is a very, very big mistake for those people who are borrowing the money, because usually they don't understand the consequences of what they're doing. But because they sign the paper, they will be held responsible for what they really, in fact, do not understand. The people who are giving the loans may be very nice while they're putting you into a debt, but they do not represent you or your best interests. They work for somebody else, or if they're a broker, they may have a fiduciary duty to the other side of the transaction, even though they appear to be working to your benefit. And always they're in it to maximize their profit. So whether we're talking about brokers, originators, credit card companies and personnel, car sales personnel, and etc., remember that saying yes to the loan brings them money and their profit. Just as an aside, I always get a chuckle out of the situation where we go to buy a car and the deal is always made with some unseen manager using our salesperson as an intermediary. The unseen person approves the deal and runs the credit perhaps. And the salesperson is in some fictitious way acting like a mediator. But in fact, of course, they're working for the car company and they're working for themselves. And get it straight that it's not that these are bad people. These are business people. They're entrepreneurs, perhaps. They are working to make a profit and they're driven to succeed just like anyone else in a business. And of course, they have their own American dream, and that's making as much as they possibly can, even do less and accomplish more. So the bigger their fees up front, the better off they are, because they are generating a lot of money and not having to do a lot of work to get that money. But remember that their exposure to loss most often is very small nowadays in the way loans are given and then sold. As we talked about in the past, that loan is securitized in more and more cases nowadays. And to refresh our memories and minds, that means that the lender gives you the loan, gives you the money, you sign the paperwork, you give them the paperwork, the note, and perhaps a mortgage, and they then sell those immediately. They get their money back with the fees from you, which you pay for to do the loan, and also they are getting some benefits because of the way the lenders, particularly banks, are able to borrow at a less interest rate in the first place. They sell the loan, they get all of their money back plus their fees, and then they, in many cases, they service the loan. In other words, they have recouped everything at the beginning, but now they're going to make fees on collecting the money and pay it to the investors who now own that securitized loan. A curious side effect of this all is that the servicing fees often are generated when, in fact, you fail on your loan, that there are late fees, penalties, higher interest rates, all of which generate more fees for the servicer. So greater profits can be made for them when you fail. As a result, they tend to push high-priced exotic loans because they make the most profit at the beginning, and then, of course, those loans are more subject to failure, and as a result, they will be getting more in servicing fees. Many of these companies have internal quota requirements for selling some of these exotic loans. And people go into these things innocently, and it's a fact that many people, particularly minorities, that qualify for prime rate loans are steered into subprime loans because the seller will get more money. The lender will get more profits from those subprime loans. So that's something that we have to be very careful about. That's why independent judgment is a useful tool here. You should always be careful of this lender who is minimizing what's going on in the transaction, that doesn't want to give you time. They say, oh, just sign here and here and here, that minimization process. Or also, they're dismissive. When you raise a question, they steer you away from that. It really doesn't mean that. What you think is what it says. Most of us will feel green and naive, and we will be overwhelmed with the apparent knowledge that the lender has and our lack of it. They've done this so many times before, they are the experts, and they can be quite assertive, if not aggressive. But that kind of hurriedness usually leads to the bait and switch kinds of situations where it's easy to get into, but turns out to be hard to pay down line. You come to the closing table and you thought you had one deal, and then you see that there are some substantially different terms that are going to cost you more money in the short term and definitely in the long run. For those of you just tuning in, this is attorney Robert Liptak, and our program is Life in Debt at KRU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. So these are all kinds of predatory tactics in effect. And what we see is that too many times there's even deception or fraud involved. The lender misrepresents the terms of the loan. They're making loans without regard to your ability to repay. They make loans with deceptive teaser rates that later balloon astronomically. Loans are packed with undisclosed charges and fees, and there's sometimes even kickbacks and illegal kickbacks in these loan situations. So the point is really independent representation is a critical asset, and you have to understand the terms. There's a whole psychology in making and creating these loans, and it's important to note that you can take control here. You're not a victim. You need to understand that you're being manipulated and how that takes place. The strategic psychology of lending is that lenders know, use, and cultivate the fact that most consumers engage in marketplace decision-making that involves mental shortcuts, that is, educated guesswork, and also the consumer's emotional pursuits. The lenders exploit the mental shortcuts. For example, the minimum monthly payment concept. That's just part of their business model. And for example, if they could convince you that you can make the minimum monthly payment, that $299 a month car payment, then you're hooked. You don't do the computation that it's $299 for 6 or 7 years. rather than 3 years, which means that you may be tripling or quadrupling the base cost of the car. But that, of course, is not emphasized. What they say is you can afford and you do deserve this loan. And, of course, what the borrowed money will bring you. Billions of dollars are spent every year on behavioral research by the marketing industry in order to understand the consumer biases and the educated guesswork that consumers use. Lenders present consumers with credit choices in a context that really masks the risks and misrepresents the consequences of bad choices. And this is called framing. That's right, you're getting framed. Framing promotes shortcuts in the reasoning process. And the result is filtering out important basic information. The lenders direct the consumer's attention on selected product features that highlight the benefits and mask or evade the potential risks for loss. Short-term preferences are emphasized, long-term potential problems de-emphasized. So the important rule is you should always approach the loan with the goal of uncovering the risks yourself. One interesting example is the 5-option loan or pick a payment loan. This is now happening in the mortgage industry where you can choose from 5 different options each month to pay your loan. The fixed monthly amount of principal and interest, you can pay interest only, you can pay more principal, you can pay minimum payments that cover less than the interest owed, but that interest is added to the balance of the loan. And then there's the no payment loan, so the interest is added to the balance of the loan. So you're actually increasing the principal balance if you make those choices. But the short-term frame is that you are getting this option to have great flexibility in your debt repayment plans. But the psychology is that consumers themselves naturally tend to overestimate their ability to repay and underestimate their future borrowing needs or desires. As a result, they choose pricing structures as if they will borrow modest amounts and pay their monthly bills in full, or at least on time. This turns out to be factually incorrect because we don't factor in any cushion for inevitable changes in our lives. So the emergency, the unexpected car repair expense, furnace failure, or something like that. So these mental shortcuts are a type of decision-making that has a great effect on us and, in fact, a greater effect on poor people who have less of a margin for error. And we can kind of define poor as someone who is not able to save at least 10% of your income after each pay period. In other words, people who are borrowing money to pay back money already borrowed or for things they simply cannot afford based on their income. Client comes to mind who makes $15,000 per month and is really poor because his family cannot pay back all of its debt every month. Another practical example for all of us is payday loans. Now, these are falsely described or framed as short-term credit products, but lenders intentionally discount or ignore the inevitable recurrence of cash shortage that prompted the consumer to seek out the loan in the first place. The consumer's choice probably would be much different if the loans were framed as escalating balance loans or payment will go up rapidly loans. But how it is framed is the success behind the marketing strategy. We need to look beyond the framing and find the real risks on our own. The complex structure of prices and consumer financial products really are deliberate devices used to confuse or distract consumers so profits can be maximized. Thus, assuming that a lending product's success would be measured by the consumer's ability to repay the loan within a reasonable period of time and at a reasonable cost for the loan, when we look at payday loans, for example, we can say that payday loans are totally failed products. Statistically, 60% of all consumers who make payday loans will fail on those loans. They may not fail immediately, they will roll them over, and yet that most of those loans will ultimately fail. But the loan itself may get held onto and paid long enough at an extraordinarily high interest rate, going upwards of 400 and 500% a year. The payday lender therefore is making back all of its principal outlay with lots and lots of interest before the loan fails. But this puts the debtor in a very distressed posture. So when we look at this, the concept of consumer autonomy is being manipulated, free will is being eroded, and there is a lot of triggering that goes on through this framing process to get people to think they're getting one thing, they're in fact getting another thing with a lot more risk and inevitable long-term problems associated with it. But those risks are completely overshadowed by the upfront short-term benefits that the framing emphasizes in the loan transaction. An interesting aside to this is that the lender uses the advantage of affinity group marketing. So people who are in a specific minority group or religious group are often targeted in the marketing of that loan, is promoted and facilitated based on segregation of those minority characteristics or race-based pricing characteristics. And of course, all of the lenders feed on the credit anxiety that we all have when we're looking to get a loan, to get approval of a loan, the self-esteem that goes into that, and the rejection that is associated with not getting the loan that we are seeking. Knowing as we do that there is exploitation, which is real, that the sellers can and successfully and consistently impose harmful terms on consumers, you as the potential debtor need to take control of the decision making in the loan giving process. In conclusion then, you may need to borrow money, but don't agree to or sign anything until you fully understand the terms, the meaning of the words before the bottom line, and the real risks and long-term consequences of signing. Don't fall prey to any pressure to sign. Always shop around. Use that as a tool of negotiation, as leverage. Negotiate. Be prepared to walk away and shop elsewhere. Be independently represented where appropriate. Get opinions. Use cash and debit cards if you can. As a major rule, don't buy it unless you can afford it with cash or a conventional traditional loan structure. In all homeowner transactions, be represented. Get fixed rates over adjustable rates. Find and use only legitimate, trustworthy credit sources with appropriately priced loans with clear, simple, and fair terms. This is attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.